Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, and everybody. Hello, everybody. Welcome to week 10. I think it's week 10. The Tiger Minor League Report Recap Podcast. I'm really excited. My name is Chris Brown, and young David is, we're just bribing over Expos jerseys and all that stuff. So he played in a men's league, and I have this, this 19 or remake of a Pedro Martinez jersey, and David has the, that's sweet. That is badass. So you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartMedia, and Stitcher. A lot to get to this week as Erie went down to Richmond, played a big division series against the Flying Squirrels, and that did not end well. Toledo had a really good week, and their offense was clicking. West Michigan split with the Nuts, the Lance Lugnuts. Lakeland had a really good week as well. We'll get to some Florida Coast League Tiger action, and does not look well either. But I mean, I sat through a whole game today and watched the Tigers have two hits, and it was after yesterday. Yesterday was a really hard fought game. Victor Reyes had three hits, but again, it was a couple mental errors too. But you saw Javier Baez walk three times for the first time in his career. So you're thinking today with Tarek Skubal on the hill. But Toronto's lineup, I'll have to say this. Out of all the teams I've watched this year at Comerica Park, by far, Toronto's the best hitting team I've seen so far this season. If you make a mistake, they're going to punish it big time. And defensively, I thought they were defensively sound. Even, I know Vlad Guerrero gets a lot of crap for being a little heavy, but he looks really good out there. So, but yeah, gentlemen, how was your weekend?
Pretty good. Worked a lot, but yeah, we got to watch some Tiger baseball and watch the Blue Jays fans invade Comerica Park. So that was unfortunate to see, but yeah, it's unfortunate. The only thing I'll say about the Blue Jays is I think they get overlooked because they're in the AL East, but like they have an extremely deep lineup, and it's like even their bench is pretty deep compared to the rest of the division. And it's just I think the Tigers just got hit with the freight train this weekend, and That's all we can say about it. We did get a chance to drag out one though, so I was happy about that.
Yeah,
it's frustrating to see them really go in there and fight and take down Kevin Gausman, and then go out against Ross Stripling today and get one hit, and then they got a second hit late against the bullpen. But I don't know how much longer we can just sit here with an offense that every other game seems to get about three hits and no runs. It's really frustrating.
I mean, go ahead, David.
No, the one thing I was going to say, this kind of calls back to my slogan throughout our stretch of the show, is I was saying the whole time, like, he is working at bats. He was working at bats extremely well. And yeah, I was proud of him for that. He had a tough day today, but yeah, it's as I was watching him taking at bats in that game, I was just like, this is the Mets Javier Baez that we wanted. But, yeah, it was nice to see something.
Yeah, but admittedly, I will say this in terms of, I mean, the Miguel Cabrera ceremony today, first 3,000 hit, seeing Victor Martinez there, seeing the Alex Avila getting thrown out the first pitch and what have you. That was cool. And I mean, Al Avila got booed, and I hate to say this, but rightfully so to a certain extent. I mean, I'm not gonna. It's and here's the thing: the reason why he hasn't been out in the public too much, and the same thing, Chris Ehlers came out and he booed, which is a little that's neither here nor there, but Tiger fans did not hold back, and I thought was a very good indication in that people want good baseball in this town, and they got good baseball down in Toledo, which we'll start here with that, and as one of my better segues this week. And so but yeah, the Mudheads this week 5-1 against the Iowa Cubs, and there were some standout performances we'll get to here in a second. But this has been rehab city for the last 2 weeks now with players coming in and out. One item of note to remember, Eduardo Rodriguez, who's supposed to be called up, hasn't played due to personal reasons. And Jose Cisnero, according to manager AJ Hinch, yesterday has a swollen ankle that something happened in Lakeland. He wasn't exactly sure, but his ankle, so he's going to be out another 5 to 7 days until his ankle gets healed again. So, or just healed. So just a heads up on that. And
that's a shame. Sorry to cut you off, Chris. I was only saying, it's like he looked pretty good in his one inning of rehab outing. It happens. Anyways, go on.
Yeah, the foot, it depends on, I can't remember if it's the foot that he goes off the rubber or his planting foot, but either way, it's still part of what you're doing. So, anyway, 5-1, and Chris, in terms of standouts this week, offensively, Trace Thompson today had quite a day, at a home run, and it got a little chippy as Brendan Davis got thrown out in the second inning on I thought it was a strike, personally, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to tell from the camera angle in Toledo. It's kind of offset, you know, to the right of the pitcher, but it looked kind of like a changeup down and in to a right-hander, and it was definitely from the camera standpoint, it looked like it was at least a borderline pitch, like nothing to completely lose it over. But yeah, he lost it, threw everything down, threw his bat, threw his gloves behind him, and I think that the ump just sat there and let the glove, batting glove, flutter down and hit him on the shoe and used that as an excuse to throw him out. Like, all right, well,
yeah.
But, yeah, it was a bummer. No, but, like, Trace Thompson, yeah, he only went, like, 4 for 17, but all four hits were extra base hits this week. So he was doing some damage. And Zach Short had a really nice week, too. 7 for 18, 3 doubles, 5 RBIs. Not bad.
As far as pitching performances go, David, is there anybody that you wanted to highlight this week?
My big one was Drew Carlson, the start he made. It's like, I know we've used him out of the bullpen a lot when he's up in Detroit, but yeah, he made a start, went 2 innings in Toledo. I can't remember what day it was. I think it was like Tuesday or Wednesday.
And today, like, I think he
wasn't setting the world on fire by any means. But...
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Okay. No, you're bringing up
a game last week.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't setting the world on fire, but yeah, it's like it was nice to see him putting together productive innings, because like every time he comes up in Detroit, I feel like we see him like either put together a good inning or he gets shelled. So, yeah.
Yeah, the schedule started today was supposed to be Drew Hutchison, then he was scratched. So I'm not sure what happened there. But I was listening to the Toledo broadcast at the game today. They didn't mention – they just said it was going to be a bullpen start. So, and however, Drew, there is a TBA for Tuesday's game against the White Sox. So, that doesn't mean Hutchinson is going up, but there might be some roster changes coming up on the horizon, so we'll see what happens. But as far as the offense goes today, was it 14 runs today?
Yeah, right, 14 runs. Beat the Cubs 14-9. It was a good day for us offensively.
Yeah, Ryan Kreidler came back yesterday, I think, or 2 days ago. He's played 2 games, and he had – you know, it's 1 for 8 with 3 strikeouts, but the one hit was a home run today, so that was nice to see. And, you know, like Riley Green has been good. He still doesn't seem quite right. He's not lifting the ball or hitting it hard enough, but he's still Riley Green. So what is he? Let's see. What did he do this week? 8 for 23, but just one extra base hit. So it's like, yeah, that's, you know, you're hitting 300, but a little more power we'd like to see. And I think he'll get a few more games to do that. And Akil Badu is still down there too, and he's another guy that's still trying to find it. Like he's 3 for 16, but he did walk 5 yeah. times, which is kind of, you know, it's part of his game. Stole 2 bases. Yeah. So he's still finding ways to help the team.
Yeah, as far as that goes, I mean, it is definitely good to see the walks and kind of pitch recognition and see what he's going to do. There are some people on social media who are asking when he's going to come back, and I don't see this happening anytime soon at all. And I mean, right now with the Tigers' outfield situation currently, Daz Cameron, by the way, just a heads up, was out due to COVID protocol reasons, and so that was the reason why, as said on the press conference on Friday. So, but they, as far as the Mudheads go, they are in a strange, like, it doesn't make any sense to me, but they have two massive big, just East and West for the International League. I thought there would be like a Central Division because they have enough teams to do it, but it's not the case. And they're 5.5 back of Nashville, the Brewers affiliate, who have one of the better, the best run differential in the league at -68. So what's next for the Mudhens? Well, they're going to be on the road, but then I was talking to one of their official scorer, a guy we met last year by the name of John, who's really, really nice guy. And he worked the Tigers game today. Toledo has the Worcester. David, can you do a East Coast accent or no?
No, I can't say. I can.
I like Jeremy's like, no, not happening, Roger. Not happening. All right, but no, nevertheless, they go to Worcester to take on the Woo Sox. I still like the Pawtucket. I still like the I miss the old Pawtucket Sox. So we move on to Erie, and Erie was a frustrating week for bullpen wise. The bullpen could not hold the lead at all during this whole series. And I was talking to Greg about this in terms of Erie struggling on the road in Richmond, something along the lines of like they they haven't been really good. And Gernstein Moreno had a couple of walks in the other night. And today, as Chris texted me earlier today about Brandon White, who's been automatic, and Erie also Nick Kuzza, who continues to baffle me. He can spin it up there, but can't have no fastball control. He got lit up in the two innings or point two or the two thirds of inning he worked today, as the Erie Seawolves lose an extra innings. And in terms of offensive stance, I'll start with you, David. Who stood out to you?
Well, in terms of offense, it was kind of looking through the box scores and looking at the spreads and trying to find the silver lining from Erie's rough week. I gave it to Quincy Newporte. It really looked like he carried Erie's lineup because, like, yeah, that was really the big shining moment I had. It's like 3 home runs, 8 RBIs, went 6 for 23. It was a pretty noticeable bright spot for Erie in the lineup. It's like since Kerry Carpenter is starting to cool down, he had a I'm not going to say subpar week, but like for the numbers that he's been putting up as of late, it's rough to see him go. It's rough to see any hitter going through a cold streak. But if it's one of the best like offensive prospects you have right now, aside from Colt Keith, then yeah. But yeah, Quincy Newporte, he's my big guy for today.
I thought Parker Meadows had a nice week. I think he had a homer and a triple, some walks. I think he ended up leading the team in average over the week. And Andre Lipsius kind of went ham with the walks again. I think he was 4 for 15 with a double, a homer, and 9 walks. But in one of the walks was a huge one. It could have been huge. On Saturday night, he worked a walk and then came home on a Dingler single, I think, to go up. And then, of course, bullpen fell apart. And that's just been the story in Erie all year. I mean, it wasn't like the starters were absolutely lights out this week, but they had enough. They certainly deserved to split the series based on how the starters pitched and how they kept coming up with big hits late. Dane Myers had a big home run at the end of today's game to tie it. And I mentioned that Dingler had a big RBI single that they fought. But, if you look at Erie's team this year, they have the best rotation or best ERA from starters in the Eastern League. It's like 3-2. But their bullpen ERA is a full run worse and ranks 8th. So it's kind of been the issue all year long. Unfortunately, it really cost them this week when they needed – they're now 2 games behind Richmond because they went 1-5, and that stings.
Yeah, and the Seawolves did pick up some – they sent down Jerry Tilk to West Michigan – and they signed a reliever out of the Yankees organization. And I'm trying to pull up his name right now at the moment, but he was signed. He's a sinker slider type, but the last month And his numbers in May for Somerset did not look good, but it's giving Seawolves some much needed bullpen help because if the starting staff, you're absolutely right, Chris, it's been a fun watch. And in terms of even the stats that David pulled up this week, so good job with pull up how good Reese Wilson was in the two starts. And same thing with Wilmer Flores, had a really good start. Five innings, two hits, or two runs, one walk, and eight strikeouts. And Austin Bergner gave the Seawolves the only win of the week. Five innings, one run, three walks, and seven strikeouts. And they've been using Adam Wolf out of the bullpen. So that kind of maybe that might be a little bit of help because Wolf might, you know, in terms of even seeing one or two times throughout the lineup as a long reliever might be a good idea. But the biggest takeaway for the Seawolves, in addition to that, though, offensively speaking, there's not the consistency is lacking too. I mean, there, you know, Eric De La Rosa had a good game today. Parker Meadows had a single too that scored a run. And it's good to see Parker Meadows coming into his form a little bit. I mean, he's over 300 in the month of June and over the last two or three weeks, or even a week before that, before June. And so that's a positive way to take away, David. I would always like, you always want to look for something positive. And I know you do the same, but what have you thought in terms of what's your thoughts about Parker Meadows so far as he is adjusting to Erie?
Well, I mean, in my opinion, I think like it, I, even though he's starting to come together in Erie, honestly, I still think it wasn't the most amazing idea to bring him up from West Michigan. But yeah, I think we were really saying like just sink or swim. And if you're sinking, just try and kick your feet really hard and swim back up. And that's exactly what Parker Meadows has been doing. It's like some of the games, some of the spreads I've been looking at from his at-bats in Erie over the last week, it's like he's starting to, his at-bats are starting to look longer. And with a, like he just had a, he had a two-hit game, some game in the week. I can't remember what day it was. Yeah, it's always nice to see a hitter coming into his own a little bit, especially coming, adjusting from single A to double A, which is, we know for any minor leaguer can be a big step. And yeah, it's nice to see him seeing the ball better. It's like, I feel like when he got called up here at first, we were seeing like 0-for-3 with three strikeouts or just like, just a lot of offers. And that's always, it's always tough for a hitter. It doesn't matter what hitter you are. It's tough on your psyche when you have a week of like one, like 2-for-3 for 20 with eight strikeouts. Yeah. Stuff like that happens. And hopefully the curve will start to go back up for Parker Meadows. It's like once the singles and doubles start to come, then the home runs might come. So yeah, that's my take on it.
Yeah, I mean the opposite end of the spectrum, unfortunately, is Gage Workman, who had basically the Tony Snell week. He went 0-for-15 with 10 strikeouts, no walks, nothing, no runs, nothing. It's like, man, that's got to be a real tough week. I think he only played in four games, but yeah, that's tough.
Honestly, I'm surprised. Like, all respect to Gage Workman. I think he's working as hard as he can to try and come back with Erie. But like, we did it with Daniel Cabrera, who I'm sure we're going to get to once we do the West Michigan recap. But yeah, it's like maybe a trip down to West Michigan for a little bit could do Gage Workman some good. It's tough to see because like I feel like every week we do the show, we give some condolences to Gage Workman on having a pretty rough week at it.
It was slightly different with Workman and Cabrera. Cabrera was also hitting under 200, but he wasn't making any hard contact whatsoever. Like Workman swings and misses constantly, but when he makes contact, it goes really far. So his situation reminds me more of like Jake Rogers. I mean, he had a full year in Erie and then went back. I could see Workman staying there all year and then starting next year there as well and seeing if maybe he can pick it up. But yeah, I mean, it's tough because like you said, he's certainly not consistent in any way that we'd like other than striking out consistently, which is unfortunate. So,
well, cause like, I can't remember when it was, but like, you remember that game where he went like three or 4-for-5 with like 2 or 3 RBIs. It's like, he had a monster day at Erie and then like, he just kind of tapered off after that.
Yeah. He had 2 4 RBI games in 1 week, I think.
Yeah.
He had a pretty good week last week. Yes. I recall.
But
yeah, it was last week, but yeah, I mean, it's like you mentioned, Chris, like he's good at hitting the ball hard. And the one thing I'll say is like, if you're a hitter with a pretty good hard hit rate, it's like eventually it's like the same thing's went on with Jonathan Scope in Detroit. It's like he was hitting the ball crazy hard. He was just kept hitting it in and out in one way or another. It's like same thing could happen with Workman as well. It's like you just keep hitting the ball on the screws, and eventually, like, something's going to land, and you're going to get lucky.
There is, by the way, did you guys see Toledo made a trade for a pitcher? Tigers made a trade for a pitcher that hasn't pitched since 2016. Did you guys see that story?
Yeah, I did see that. Matter of fact, now that you bring it up, I actually did see that in the transaction to the Tigers recently.
Did you see that, Chris?
No, I missed it.
All right. Let me see. It's I'm trying to find it. I can't find it on the transactions sheet.
Yeah, I don't see it either.
I gotta find it here.
No, it's funny. I was just reading about this the other day. I'm trying to find it at the same time you are.
Yeah, Evan Pitchell from the Freak posted about it, and I'm going through the transactions to see what happened exactly. And I'm not really sure why. In terms of the logic, I froze.
No, I can hear you now.
Oh, okay.
It was Michael Mario, or Marriott. Michael Marriott.
Yeah, Michael Marriott. Thank you. Okay. Hmm. Yeah, and that's, I don't know what that was going on with that and the reason behind it. But, yeah, I mean, 40.
Here's the line. 44 major league games, 5.98 ERA, two saves in three opportunities, 45 strikeouts career with the 2 years with the Royals, 1 year with the Phillies. So maybe they see something we don't.
Any idea who this guy is, Chris?
No.
And that's saying something. If you, yeah.
Hey, maybe it sounds vaguely familiar, but maybe that's just because his last name is Marriott, and you know.
Do you guys want to hear my take on this? Because
sure.
I don't know if this could be applicable, but this is the first thing that comes to mind. Is this is kind of the dollar store story? But do you guys recall what happened with Ryan Madsen? It's like he got injured, and that pretty much ended his career in Philadelphia. But like, he started throwing some bullpens, and things were working out pretty good. So he got a contract with the Royals and started tearing it up. But like, I know this guy doesn't look like he's had much of a career to speak of, but like, I don't know. It could be a story of like, you know, he threw a couple bullpens, felt good, and then we'll see him in Detroit in a couple of weeks. But that's my dollar store take on that.
He was in indie ball a little bit and with the Reds last year and the Phillies last year. Yeah, I don't know.
He's a pitch to contact, but then, like I said, I'm looking through everything here and I still don't. It's weird. I'm trying to see if I can find it on even Baseball Reference. Not even, missing something. I don't know. Anyway, all right. Sorry, we should just keep going and. Well, yeah, probably because Casey Mize is going to be out for the year. But it could, I mean, there's a lot of things that factor in that. But I just thought that was strange that we go with that guy. All right, moving on. Anyway, what's up, David?
No, I'm only going to say it's like, you know, Major League analytics department nowadays are like insanely like specific. So like, maybe they could have seen something and be like, hey, this guy's putting up in like very strange statistic numbers that we might not be able to see. And they're like, maybe it's worth taking a shot. But yeah, that's my take.
Yeah, it was weird. It just doesn't come up on the Toledo transaction sheet either. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just lying to it. Either way. All right, let us move on to West Michigan as they split this 3-3 this week against the Lugdunks. Like I mentioned earlier, they were outscored 34-24. But Carlos Guzman, 10 innings, 1 run, 7 strikeouts. And Christopher, how many times have you seen Carlos Guzman truly is Jekyll and Hyde with him?
You know, it felt like most of the times it would be Jekyll and Hyde in the same game. It'd be, I don't know which one is good and which one is bad. I've never known that for Jekyll and Hyde. But he would be good early, like one time through the lineup, and then get touched up afterward. The velo would drop a little bit. The command would fall. So maybe he's building up some stamina and learning how to pitch more. You know, remember he was a shortstop or third baseman for not most of his career, but he started out that way. But we all, like we've talked about it many times, we think that he probably his best in the bullpen, where he could excel as a fastball changeup guy. And but I guess they just want to keep trying and trying, get some more innings, and maybe work on that breaking ball in a more consistent manner than he would out of the bullpen. But yeah, I mean, it's nice to see that Kim put together two strong outings, because he's had a couple blowups this year.
Now, of course, there's the Ty Madden, who's been last two starts, and the times we've seen him, Chris, this year, he was struggling with command, but he's looked dominant. Just some clean innings, and he looks like he's utilizing his fastball again.
Yeah, the velo was back up. You know, he had dipped up diver. It had dropped down to like topping out at 95, but he's back up to 97, possibly 98 lately. And yeah, I mean, he only had three strikeouts in that game, but he worked six innings and a lot of fly balls to center field, like, you know, moderately deep fly balls, but he also got a lot of weak contact, and it was just a really quick, efficient outing for him. He didn't walk anybody. It was really impressive. So yeah, I think he's figuring some things out, and as you know, pitchers sometimes do. So that was good to see. Unfortunately, Dylan Smith, you dip up. yeah. Dylan Smith had kind of the worst outing of his young career, but just one of those things where it happened. I think the inning snowballed on him, and then I think he hit his pitch limit.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of have a take on Ty Madden. It's like, honestly, I feel like this is I can't recall a pitcher that this has happened to off the top of my head, but it's like, I honestly feel like he's starting to change. Like, after watching some of his starts for West Michigan this year, like some of the starts he got like blown up in relatively, it's like, you feel like he was trying to, it looks like he was overthrowing a lot. It's like, it looks like he was trying to like really get at hitters. He was throwing his fastball too much. And like you mentioned, Chris, the velocity is down a little bit. It's like, when you consider yourself an attack pitcher, like a la Max Scherzer, it's like when you have an ineffective fastball and the point of an attack pitcher is just to blow it by everybody, then unfortunately you're going to get blown up. It's like, I feel like you see this with like Dallas Keuchel. It's like, I know Ty Madden has better velocity than him, but like when he was with the Astros and he had that really good year, it's like you started to see him. It's like, you don't have to have you don't have to have an amazing fastball to get guys out. It's like you can be efficient, and that's what Ty Madden did. It's like when we can be like the Jeremy Hellickson type pitcher, and you don't focus on blowing it by everybody and trying to focus on strikeouts, then you could see some success with it. And I feel like that's what Ty Madden's been doing recently.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. He's kind of sequencing, and I think the reason why some of his starts, I think he was trying to. Like a couple of his starts, he was trying to start he started with off-speed first versus fastball. Maybe he was just working on something. But real quick, in our YouTube chat, Little Buddy, what do you guys think about Kerry Carpenter? I think Kerry Carpenter's fine. I mean, he's doing is pretty remarkable, but I still think he's a fourth outfielder at best at a major league level. I think he strikes out too much. He doesn't draw enough walks. But that's just my take. David, what's your take?
My take on Kerry Carpenter as of now, in my opinion, I think I'm not going to take this with a grain of salt. Take this at face value for what I say, but I think he kind of has like the Steven Moya syndrome right now.
That's fair.
Yeah, that's like, I'm sure you guys know exactly what I'm talking about. So if you want me to elaborate, I will. But like, you know, you put up amazing numbers at Erie. Ever since this happened, I'm not going to trust and. Amazing season at Erie anymore as much as I did with Steven Moya. But yeah, it's like
smart man.
Like you said, Rog, he's hitting a snot out of the ball right now. I think like still like an outrageously lopsided ratio of walks to strikeouts. Yeah, it's like when he's hitting the ball, he's hitting it hard, but that's the prop I'll give to him. But that's my take on it.
Yep. I've made sort of the comparison to Kristen Stewart. It's the same idea with Steven Moya, kind of. The difference, Stewart was, you know, would actually work a walk and walk a lot. But both Stewart and Moya put up big power numbers in Erie. And that's just the way it goes sometimes. There are some players who are you know, able to destroy double A ball and even, you know, play pretty well at triple A, but they don't have, they don't quite have everything they need to make it to the bigs. And as Raj touched on it, like Carpenter doesn't walk enough and he's not going to provide you any real value on defense. He can handle the corner outfielders, corner outfield. Okay. He's not like a plus defender and he's not a plus runner or even an average runner. So he's not going to give you any value on the base paths and he's not an up the middle defender. So it's really, you're counting on a guy to provide all the value with his bat. And, he hasn't proven – I mean, he's obviously hitting for a high average this year, and some of that is just because he's hitting everything over the wall. But, yeah, I it's tough when you're reliant completely on your bat. It's a hard road to make it to the majors and contribute when you don't have any supplementary skills, unfortunately.
Speaking of supplementary skills, though, by the way, Josh Crouch, who can catch really well but also can hit. That's a good segue right there. Smooth. He went 6-for-12 for the weekend at RBI. He had a really good week, and so did Trevor, whose official mascot, Ben Malgeri, who finished 7-for-13 with a couple RBIs and a walk. And everybody's a big fan. Yeah, that. And no problem on answering the question, little buddy. And Chris's boy, Jeremy knows. Yeah. He's gonna have. I'm gonna get a Crouch jersey.
Yeah, Chris, I was going to say, I'm really mad at you that you're winning our prospect race right now, because as of right now, Josh Crouch is beating the snout out of Jake Holton in terms of production as of the last week. But yeah, well done, my friend.
Well, it doesn't necessarily mean anything. It doesn't mean that Crouch has like a big league career ahead of him. I just, I keep mentioning it. I saw one at bat in spring training. I thought that was good. And I was like, so I've been watching him a little bit. I was at the game where he hit his first home run, but I didn't get it on video, so I had to go on email, the app to get it, which made me feel dumb. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, he had a good week. He's an interesting guy. He seems like he might have kind of plus bat-to-ball skills, you know, in, on top of hitting pretty well. What, he walked once and had zero strikeouts this week? It's like, all right, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean,
but again, we need to see him in higher levels to know, but for right now it's nice. He's been a nice find so far this year. Who knows what he'll do once he gets to double A.
Yeah. I mean, if I can throw out a comp for Josh Crouch as of now, I can't remember if I'm going to say his last name right, but do you guys remember Sam McMillan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of the comp I have for Josh Crouch right now. It's like, cause he reminds me a lot. It's like, I see a look on your faces, but yeah, this, first thing that came to mind when I was watching him was Sam McMillan in his one good year with West Michigan. But yeah, that's my take.
The reason why I think McMillan, the McMillan comparison isn't fair is because while McMillan had a good eye, he always topped the ball. He could never get the ball out of the infield. Always. I mean, how many times, Chris, like, what was it? There was a series of games where we went to where it was like literally 5 or 6 foul balls were just top, and then the ground, little grounder to short or a little grounder to the first.
Yeah, I'm looking. McMillan had 5 home runs in his career. Unfortunately, that was the thing. Like, he had a good eye; it looked like it might work, and then he could never drive the ball at all. And then his defense kind of never developed either. Boy, the 2017 draft is a bit rough, but not like. The guy that I'm reminded of is Kirk Casale, who was like an 11th rounder the year they drafted James McCann, I think. And so they took these both, the couple catchers. And Casale, I think, probably has more raw power. But it's like sometimes you can grab a random catcher after the 10th round and have it work out because, I don't know, catching's tough and some guys just kind of have a knack for it. And like that's the thing that I enjoyed is that he also seems to be pretty good on defense. That's gonna keep you in the system for long enough to let you try to hit. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. It's only been like a month and a half of him performing fairly well. So catching, we know, can take a lot out of guys too.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's like I thought we had like a pretty decent but not amazing defensive talent and Joey Morgan when he was here, but that was one of my more bad takes. But yeah, it's like being a defense as a catcher, especially like in a system where our catching depth isn't is pretty much as deep as a divot in the outfield. yeah, maybe it's like a defense first catching can get you a long way. And if you can handle the bat well, if Josh Crouch's offensive knowledge can translate through the levels, it's like I can see it going somewhere. But then again, I just compared him to Sam McMillan, so I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, again, but it's good to see the Tigers get some luck on that later rounds from the catcher. They finally proved, hey, if we draft a catcher later, we'll be fine. We don't have to draft and waste our time, guys, early on like Sam McMillan. So that sounds harsh, but I don't care because it's true. All right, let's move on to Lakeland. And let me just say something about Lakeland real quick before we get started. First and foremost, there was a lot of snickers Roger, about Roberto Campos last week. When I remember what I said when I saw him, they looked more selective and it was taking counts deeper. And everybody's like, okay, well, whatever you know. Well, I know, apparently, because he went 9-for-17 this week. He had 5 walks and Pacheco, business is normal, 6-for-18, 6 RBIs and a home run and a walk. And Carlos Mendoza, which I know a lot of people are weird about because of his height and all that, 5-for-17, a home run, 3 RBIs. This is the second week in a row he's homered. And this is a guy, I mean, his average last week wasn't as good, but still, I like Carlos Mendoza, and I like his abilities. And Chris, we'll get with you on the, well, thank you, Jeremy. Yes, I do know. Quite frankly, damn it. I don't brag. You guys know me. I don't brag at all. But I mean, come on. Sometimes I love Mark Gourash, who listens to the show constantly. But it's like every once in a while, I know my stuff. Just admit it and move on.
Preach, all right, so, preach.
Preach on. All right. So preach on, Chris. Preach on, brother Chris, about the world of the Jackson Job.
Job had his longest professional outing. 5 innings, 4 hits, 1 earned run, 2 walks, 4 strikeouts.
Call him up.
He's not setting the world on fire.
We got a good quick question about that. Yeah, call him up. Jeremy, want to know what's Crouch compared to Dingler?
Oh, well, I tried to answer it in the chat, but basically, Dingler stands out most for his athleticism. He's just he's a plus athlete, even for a catcher, and he's got a cannon of an arm. I think Crouch's arm is good. Probably close to average-ish, maybe solid average.
He needs better pop time. Honestly, when I see Crouch behind the plate, I feel like you said, sorry to cut you off, Chris, but the pop time is really, in my opinion, a pretty important stat for me for catchers. But yeah, it's like Dingler's athleticism is really taking him far, especially as far as pop time goes. It's like seeing his behind the plate to second time is like outstanding. But yeah, it's Josh Crouch can improve on that just slightly. Seeing him, I'm not going to say he looks a little lazy getting up, but I guess compared to him to Dingler, he looks just like it that much slower. But
I'll say that Crouch is more traditionally catcher shaped. He seems like he's probably about 5'10 and 215 or so. I don't know what he's listed at, but Dingler's like a legit 6'3, 225. Looks like he could be a quarterback. He has the athleticism to, he doesn't block everything and he's not sliding back and forth behind the plate like Cooper Johnson, but he's got the athleticism to move. He's really, you see him move. What I've noticed from Crouch in what I've watched is he seems to be pretty quiet behind the plate, seems to be a good receiver and has good enough arm strength to handle the running game, at least on an average basis. So I think, what you're hoping there is that he could be an average defender and maybe you got lucky with the bat. He can, hit for a little bit of average, maybe give you a handful of home runs. Whereas Dingler has the chance to be like a plus defender at the major league level if everything comes together. And then, of course, you're hoping to get anything from him on offense down the road. And it may be that he ends up as like a not all that different than Jake Rogers, actually. Although I think Jake Rogers would probably take a few more walks than Dingler.
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, I've always said this about catchers, and especially as far as like defense at catcher goes, and like how you have like your defense and offensive pitchers, like you rely on breaking and other one you rely on your fastball. It's like I'd like to think there's such a thing as you can be a blocking catcher or you can be what I like to call a wall catcher, or basically just give the pitcher something to throw at. It's like, yeah, that's like you can tell like catchers behind the plate where you can like when there's a breaking ball in the dirt, you can tell where like, oh, he's a vacuum. He'll suck it up. But like you see a catcher get down to block a breaking ball on an 0-2 count and you're like, oh my God. It's like it looks like a freaking minivan behind the plate right there. Just looks kind of clunky. Yeah.
Yeah, like De La Cruz looks like that too for Lakeland. I mean, he's a big dude, but he's like that stocky build we're talking about. But nevertheless, in terms of Lakeland, call him up on Jackson Jobe, Wilco Hernandez. And Chris, I'm going to ask this question. At some point, I think by the end of the month, I feel like there's going to be a big wave of changes coming up before the draft. With everything getting set up a little bit, you think, or in terms of like call ups and all that?
It does feel like you could very easily call up Wilco Hernandez, Garrett Burhan, and Brant Herder, West Michigan. They all feel like they've earned it, you know, but I don't know if there are the arms to kind of backfill from that point. Just looking at the FCL roster, like they are remarkably young and inexperienced. It's like, it's kind of, this is where ordinarily in the olden days when they had, they would draft, I mean, the draft would already be over right now. They would have signed, a bunch of random 24th round college pitchers that are never make the majors except for random guys like Bobrisky and possibly Garrett Hill. But those guys would be pitching in the New York Penn League back then. And then so you could bump up your guys from low A to high A and bump those guys up from the short season league to low A. So I don't know what they'll do after the draft this year. Generally speaking, you're not going to get a lot of guys who have innings to throw for the rest of the year. Like we saw it last year, Madden didn't throw after they signed him. Smith didn't throw after they signed him. I think the only guys we saw throw were the relievers, right? Like Haas and Pettit.
Right.
Or Petit. So I don't know. I don't know if they're going to stick there all year long, but it does feel like Hernandez gave up his first run in almost 20 innings. I think it was like an 18 inning scoreless streak. And he's got some talent. So it's like, yeah, this is a guy that was once a bit of a priority. So they would probably want to move him up. But then what do? Do you send Guzman down? Do you send Jordan Marks down? It's, you could, but how much do you value the development of those guys too? So, and it'll be interesting to watch. Maybe we'll just see some guys get released, some veterans get released in July, and then they start backfilling that way. But I don't know.
I could see that happening. I mean, I think that I look at the way they've been moving. Like for example, Jerry Toby got moved, sent down. They're not afraid to send guys down. I mean, Daniel Cabrera is a prime example of that. So if they, you might be right, Chris, just lack of bodies.
It just at least at the rookie level, we'll see. Right. Maybe they can find enough starters in like the 10th to 20th round this year and then put them down there and get some innings. But yeah, I don't know. I these things generally tend to work out though, right? Like unfortunately, somebody will probably get hurt in West Michigan and then somebody will come up from Lakeland. That's just the way it goes.
Yeah, I mean, and that could be Wilco Hernandez's opportunity to maybe make the next step. But like my opinion is, and sorry if this may not be the greatest take in the world, but I've always thought, like, especially if you're a pitcher in low A and like low A, high A, it's like, and the organization really has to handle them with kid gloves, because like you look at kids that like a prime example, Casey Mize, unfortunately, that we just learned recently. It's like younger pitchers are so much more volatile for injuries as they were back then. It's like you see Tommy John surgery rate is like so much higher than it was even 10 years ago. It's like, and as soon as a pitcher gets drafted, it's like you guys mentioned that Ty Madden didn't throw, Jobe didn't throw. It's like you really have to handle them with kid gloves, because like as soon as your first year in pro ball, you're automatically on like a dozen throwing programs. It's like the coaches are picking you apart, saying like, here's something we think you could do with your mechanics. And like you're releasing your curveball 1 inch further than you should be than you were in high school or college. And it's like, yeah, that's why I always think roster moves in low A, you really have to, it's like for pitching, you have to consider them before you do them, in my opinion. But I think Wilco Hernandez is has the best opportunity for a move up, in my opinion.
Speaking of younger arms, by the way, Walker Buehler has a right forearm, so he's going to be out for 5 to 7 weeks. So no one.
And he's the dude who had Tommy John surgery right after he was drafted. So it's been only 5 years. And Wilk L just coming off the Tommy John surgery. So it's like,
yeah.
I don't know. And you could make the argument really that even there's plenty to develop in a pitcher without, you know, that's kind of dependent or independent of competition level. So you can like you're talking, they monitor every pitch, everything. You can probably be like, hey, we want you to do this more. We want you to throw this more. We want to see you get 2 more inches of break on your slider. You can do all that and be a better pitcher and just deal with the fact that you're facing a bunch of 19-year-old kids. Like, it doesn't necessarily preclude you from getting better. It's just going to make your mistakes, less damaging to you.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, it just sounds like if it's just always like with pitcher injuries, it's just like this. If you think about it, okay, think about it for a moment. They're drafting them. They're learning a new pitch, right?
Mm-hmm.
They got grip. And they're starting throwing. They're starting really well. Then there's a start. They start losing velocity. And then you go, oh, well, that seems weird. That's crazy. Then there's a start to get blown up by. And then you go, oh, that was weird. And then, you know, a couple good starts and everything going well. It's not bad. Then you see this happen earlier today or earlier this year. They start kind of going, oh, I don't feel right. The pitching coach comes out to the mound. The manager comes out to the mound. They walk off together. They leave the start. And that's what happens.
Yep.
It's just like Jaws. You never know what's going to come. Get you!
So, right, they pull the barrels down under the water. So random face comes out of a boat at the bottom of the lake. Yeah.
And then in the Oscar. I was going to say, the Oscar goes to.
Yeah,
that was beautiful.
I think it was an impromptu. I was just thinking about, because I think it's like, you can use a walking, time bomb and all that stuff, but every time I think of like a dire situation, I think of Jaws, like that music just going off, dun, 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 dun. And that's how it is. Little buddy with the cut of the night. you little buddy on YouTube. Thank you. That was fantastic. Mario Van Peebles in Jaws 3 is going to come out of the water and barely be alive. So
we're going to need a stronger UCL ligament.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, it's for the record, I think the Tigers did as much as they could for Mize. And they looked at all the options. And I know it looks kind of a little silly on their part, but medicine, that kind of stuff, like if you look at the ligament, it was just the way that AJ Hinch explained it. It's just not working.
It wasn't torn.
Yeah, it wasn't torn.
It was just floppy. It was like a blown out rubber band, basically. Like,
yeah. No,
this isn't working anymore. So,
yeah.
So they'll
go ahead.
I don't know if you guys will remember this, but we're going back to circa 2016 here. But my example of how unfortunate these stories are is, I don't know if you guys remember Riley Pint.
Yes. Yeah.
This is like the. This is the story that you always hate hearing. It's like you see guys that like have so much prowess, and this is what I touched on before. It's like, it's especially rehab from Tommy John surgery is what, like 15, 18 months. It's like you see guys like that, like this happened to him, and like he had so much, like he was drafted before, he was drafted in the top five, wasn't he? I think when he went to the Rockies.
Overall,
yeah.
It's like
fourth overall.
He had so much potential, and it's like, it's just unfortunate you see these things happen to these young guys now. It's like he went down. I think he had Tommy John, didn't he? If memory serves, yeah. It was so long ago. Yeah, he had some.
He had injuries and also severe control problems.
Yeah, but when you're throwing 101 in high school, then that's gonna happen. But yeah, it's like, yeah, it's. You have a billion different stories. That's just the one that stands out for me, but it's just unfortunate.
Yeah, there's some inside the baseball knowledge there too, where Hinge was talking about how Spencer Turnbull's elbow can turn the other way. Like, I can't even explain to you. Like,
Turnbull's good?
Yeah, like that's how he gets that spin on his pitch.
Interesting. So he can pronate.
Yes.
And supinate.
Yes. Thank you for using terms that I've never heard before. But yes, that's how he. Let's just talk about that. It was a little inside the baseball stuff in the dugout the other night. So that's the stuff that I like hearing.
He has the good external rotation.
Yes, that's exactly. Yeah, that's how he's getting that spin. And it was the same thing, kind of like it was a little tear that just kind of on his injury. But anyway,
I'm sorry. I know we're going off the rails a little bit, but didn't Mize already have Tommy John, or am I thinking of somebody else?
No,
he never had Tommy John. There were a lot of minor kind of, you know, get some shots and hopefully this will heal up, sort of shoulder and elbow injuries. But
I remember that happened before we drafted him. It's like that lowered his stock a little bit. But anyways, I'm sorry. Yeah, I just got sidetracked. But yeah.
No problem. And as far as the the Florida Complex League Tiger action goes, a couple things in terms of the bless you.
No, I didn't sneeze. I just.
They went over.
Oh, I thought you sneezed there for a second. So Franklin Perez in a rehab start, 2 1/3 innings,
two runs, Hall of Fame.
Yeah, four walks, three strikeouts. So he's on the comeback trail.
He's on the mound, it's fine.
Yeah, exactly. But as far as the hitting goes, I mean, a couple of guys stand out. Clayton Campbell, who the Tigers signed out of New Zealand, he's just an 18-year-old kid who just looks like the Terminator, just built like just ripped kid who played catcher, and I think he played third base. Went 3-for-11 this week. Alonzo Reyes 3-for-3 in game 4. JD McLaughlin, who the Tigers drafted last year, I think in the 19th round, something like that.
20th, yeah.
Yeah, 2-for-4 in game 5 with 3 RBIs. Iverson Leonardo, 2-for-4 in game 1. And Abel Bastetis went 2-for-3 in game 2. And, Chris, I don't know, is there anybody missing or anybody else should I highlight in some FSL or FCL action?
I mean, it's tough. You know, it's the first week, so, you know, somebody goes 5-for-58 or whatever and looks like a world beater. It's, you know, it's nice to see.
Call him up.
What's that?
I said call him up.
Yeah, it's nice to see Bastidas doing a little bit of damage, get a home run. You know, he was one of their two big signings last year. Other than that, like, you know, you just kind of play, like, just keep an eye on guys. One thing I always do is, like, all right, how old is this guy? What's he doing? Is he walking? Like, because I was, like, last year was Dan Warrick's De La Cruz, who kind of put himself on the map by walking and hitting for power. I think he led the FCL and OPS last year, and it's a guy that I hadn't really paid any attention to. So, yeah, I just let it play out. I don't care about the wins and losses down there because every now and then an FCL game, and you see it in the DSL as well, like they'll just be like 15-11, but the teams have 5 combined hits somehow. Like it's just like, oh, yeah, there were 13 walks and 8 wild pitches, and the skunk got on the field.
And the band got on the field.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, Chris. It's like it's just tough to see the line. It's like you're right. It's like the FCL is for like the younger guys to start getting work in, but it's like it's even looking at the box scores and the spreads from the games from the past week. It's like they're all the hitters in their lineup were pretty aggressive. That's the one thing I noticed. It's like not a lot of walks. It's like Clayton Campbell. It's like you appreciate some of the pop that he showed. It was respectable. Dean Soraya's had that good game, but like, yeah, it's, I know this is also equating to that. Once you start out a season, it's going to take you a minute to get your eye in place, especially after not playing baseball for X amount of days. But yeah, it's just rough to see stretches like this. It's like, I think it was like game three or four from last week when we took that like insanely horrible loss to the Yankees. It's like, I can't remember. Was it the Yankees or the Blue Jays? It's like it was just some outrageous, like 15-2 loss. It's like, yeah, the bullpen got lit up, starter got lit up. It was a rough one to look at. Actually, no, it was the Phillies. Yeah, it was the Phillies. Yeah. But yeah, like I said, it could also be that you're not playing baseball for a while. This is your first time on a field with game action. It's like, I know they're always in the backfields doing drills of every kind, but. Like, you know, that just has to translate to the field.
Yeah, no, it's always, I always like to say, you know, good stats are better than bad stats, but they don't really tell us, especially at the complex level, they really don't tell us much of anything. I mean, like, it depends. Like, Riley Green, what, he hit, went 4-for-4 with two home runs in his first complex league game. I was like, all right, okay. But so did Brock Deathridge, right?
Yeah. He had
a monster game, too. Yeah. And I remember Austin Schatz. Yeah, I thought Austin Schatz was the next Mike Trout.
What? Really?
Do you remember Austin Schatz?
Yeah, I do remember Austin Schatz. I never heard that part.
He tore up the FBL, or what back then it was the GCL. What did he hit? 310, 360 on base, 449 slugging as an 18-year-old, 11 doubles, a triple, three homers, 16 steals. It's like, man, look at this kid. And then he never did anything ever again because it's rookie
dead,
ball. And
dead! This is the garbage you give me! Sorry. Been a while. It's been a while since I played a Mike or a Russo drop. But no, it's it's so early on right now, and I'm interested in seeing who can jump earliest to Lakeland. That's, to me, is more intriguing. If they can find somebody that's already going to be, you know, who can.
I mean, we didn't mention, I don't think we mentioned, did you mention Campos when we talked about Lakeland?
Yeah, how good he's been playing, yes.
Yeah, he had a monster week, and it's like, you know, last year we were watching Campos because nobody had really seen him yet, and it's where I kind of popped up with the monster home run totals and stuff like that. This year, I'm not expecting anything big like that. Like, it would be Bastidas would be the guy that might show up. I don't know. And then mostly I'm just watching, like, Javier Osorio down in the DSL just to see if he puts up decent numbers. So
come on, Rainer Castillo.
Guys pop up out of nowhere. But,
come on, Rainer Castillo, please do something.
Yeah, I mean, he pitched the first game, right? So he's like the ace of the SEL staff. It was a 4 innings, I think, and it wasn't a bad start. Is he even 18 yet? He might still be 17.
Yeah, he's still 17. And look, bottom line is, I think you don't get your name on the jersey until you get to West Michigan. But if the day that he gets to West Michigan and he's actually a pitcher or a starter or a dude, you better believe I'm going to get a Castillo West Michigan jersey. But it's just, it's going to happen.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
I'm sorry. I just want to touch on one thing with
sure.
Campos real quick. It's I was looking at some of the spreads he had in Lakeland last week, and one thing I like, aside from the 5 walks, it's even the at bats that he was like getting on base through a hit in, is like he was stretching him out a lot more. It's like that's the one thing I put in my scouting for him. It's like he was being a lot more selective at the plate. It's like you noticed him rolling in the air. It's like, Chris, you brought it up, like this was a few shows ago where you're like everything he hits, it's on the ground. It's like he's just not really doing anything with it. But yeah, it's like nice to see him making the adjustment. It's like being more selective, he's stretching that bats out, and it's really paying off for him, and that's what I like to see.
Yeah, and it's indicative of, you know, you never know with walks, especially in the low minors, if guys are actually displaying more patience or if it's just they ran into a really bad pitching staff. But, yeah, I mean, it's good that he's not swinging and missing a ton, and it's good that he's not – swinging at everything, and maybe, you know, that's the beginning of it. You get a little better idea of which pitches are going to be in the zone and which aren't, and then from there you can improve your discipline a little bit more to see which ones can I really drive in the air and which ones can I not. And I think, yeah, I mean, you have to be pretty pleased with. I mean, he's not tearing the world up, but he's doing pretty well, and I think probably, other than the lack of lofty home run totals, which may come in time. I think probably meeting expectations so far, if not exceeding them, which is nice to see. But
yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, especially in the lower minor league levels, in my opinion, it's like when you're a newly drafted hitter going into low A ball, it's like you start to do the like pitch identification drills and like really trying to come in your own when it comes to like knowing the strike zone in minor league baseball. And yeah, it's like, especially you also get those young pitchers that are like the wild horse type guys that they don't know. They're still trying to work on like velocity control and like trying to get on top of your curveball or slider. And like, you know, you get guys that are like, it's just going all over the place. But yeah, there's opportunity for everybody.
Yeah.
And Gamp, like I said, Campos was one of the better bats I saw down in Lakeland. And I thought his approach at the plate got better and he showed more plate discipline. But again, people are like, oh, whatever. I'm like, he's 18 years old. He's 18 years old. Yeah, whatever. I mean, what do I know? I don't actually go to the games or anything, or, you know, work and take vacations in the middle of the year. But anyway, at any rate, we're out of time. Thank you so much for listening to the Tiger Money League recap for week 10 or 11, whatever proper week you want to put behind it. And there'll be the weekly Monday article will be Tuesday article, Monday. Well, I might be able to put out tomorrow, where we go into depth into some of the other players well that in the system. And I talked to Gavin today. Was there going to be a new writer? He's going to be writing up some profiles, and he said he's going to get started this week. So looking forward to see what Gavin can do on that side of things. And yeah, there'll be some stuff coming out. Some, hopefully we'll have some college player profiles coming out here shortly. And Jeremy, thank you for supporting us as always. I really appreciate you always chiming in on YouTube. Really makes my night, and I love your enthusiasm for the game. And it's, man, anytime you come on, man, it's really nice to have you on. And it was finally good. I finally met him too. I finally met Jeremy. Yeah, I met him last month. It was really cool. So, nevertheless, David, any last thoughts before you want to get out of here?
Hopefully Erie has a better week next week. I got faith in that team. I hope the Tigers do better as well. And go Tigers and all their minor league affiliates.
Chris, what about you before we get out of here? Anything?
I got nothing. I have no thoughts.
I got nothing.
Baseball destroys me on the inside.
But we love it.
Yeah.
We love it.
Oh, we do. And today was an example of that today. Baseball was – yeah. Anyway, at this point, we do need hitters. Yes. Yes, we do need hitters across the way. Hopefully they come sooner or later. But if not, right now it's going to still be a long season. So three-game series starts with the White Sox tomorrow, and I'll be out there Tuesday and Wednesday. Everybody, have a good week. Call that the Dick Clark wave.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.